Welcome to Vegas Inc. Radio. I'm Dellen Goldberg, host of the show and business editor of Vegas Inc. and the Las Vegas Sun. Over the next half hour, we'll discuss a new name for the Imperial Palace and a new look for the Golden Gate Casino. But first, we turn our attention to a lawyer making national news with his fights for free speech and the First Amendment. I'm here with Vegas Inc. reporter Steve Green. Welcome, Steve.
Good morning. Thank you.
So you recently sat down for a long talk with Mark John Randazza, who is one of the cutting-edge free speech attorneys, and he's here in Las Vegas. How would we know him? What cases is he working on here?
Right. Randazza moved his law firm to Las Vegas last year because his largest client had moved to Las Vegas. His largest client is a adult movie company. But Randazza was also known in Las Vegas because he was one of the attorneys who was fighting Right Haven. Right Haven is the Las Vegas company that had filed copyright infringement lawsuits over content from the Las Vegas Review-Journal and the Denver Post. Randazza was one of the attorneys who convinced the judges that those lawsuits lacked merit for various reasons, and now he's trying to get money out of Right Haven to recover legal fees for one of his clients.
And just for people who aren't so familiar, the Right Haven case, these were the infamous cat bloggers and people who on sports websites who copied and pasted stories, apparently for fair use, according to Randazza, but not maliciously, not to make money. They didn't know necessarily that what they were doing is wrong.
Right. Yeah. Right Haven targeted generally small-time websites and bloggers. There were a few big names in there, like the Drudge Report, but for the most part, Right Haven targeted people who just had made a mistake and didn't really realize what they were doing might have involved copyright infringement. And for various reasons, the Right Haven lawsuits lacked merit. Most notably, Right Haven lacked standing to sue, so it couldn't even get in court. And in many cases, the defendants were protected by fair use, which has First Amendment implications, free speech, and that's where Randazza came in because he specializes in free speech cases.
And the reason Right Haven didn't have standing, the judges decided, was essentially because it was set up as a company, not a law firm, to make money?
Right. The copyright law does not allow people to use copyrights for strictly filing lawsuits, strictly to make money. The copyright law is set up to promote free expression and creativity, not for people to make money off of copyrights.
And you asked an interesting question of Randazza. If he was on the other side of the case, he would still take it. He takes both sides of the issue, right? It's just the freedoms that he's in cares about?
Right, yeah. Randazza is interesting because he also sues copyright infringers, and he does that on behalf of one particular porn company. And he explains the difference is that the porn content is not given away for free on the internet like the Review Journal news stories were. The porn content is DVDs that sell for like $60. And if somebody steals one and uploads it to the internet, it can really devastate a porn company's business.
So with back to Right Haven for a second, are these people that settled or paid money to Right Haven, can they get their money back? Where do they stand?
Well, there's some theory that people who settled with Right Haven before it was determined that Right Haven had no right to sue them, they should get a refund. Randazza points out it's not that simple, that they're opening themselves up to getting sued again if they try to get out of the settlement. For instance, the Review Journal, which actually owns the copyrights and does have standing to sue, could sue them again for the same infringement. These are such minimal infringements that don't really cost the Review Journal anything in terms of revenue that the chances of them getting sued are pretty small and the damages they face are pretty small. But just having to go to court can be expensive for these people.
Absolutely. And one of the interesting things, apparently there's a State Bar Association investigation of Right Haven and their practices, but nothing's really come of it?
Right. The State Bar of Nevada regulates attorneys, and as early as the fall of 2010, it received complaints about Right Haven's conduct. I think the main complaint has involved allegations that Right Haven as a company was operating as an unlicensed law firm where it was sharing revenue with its clients, the Denver Post and the Review Journal. A federal judge suggested that. A federal judge found on the record that Right Haven had misled the court and likely made dishonest statements to him. And so the State Bar of Nevada has had plenty of material to work with for 2.5 years involving Righthaven, but for reasons that are really not clear, hasn't done anything. Now, I check regularly with the State Bar, and every month they tell me that they're working on it, but they have a heavy caseload, and at some point they'll resolve their investigation.
But this was a national case. I mean, the Denver Post was involved, and it got attention. Do you think this gives a black eye on our regulatory agency?
I think it calls into question, and we've reported this, it calls into question, you know, how effective is our system to regulate attorneys when a federal judge finds a certain group of Righthaven attorneys had misled him, finds the company, and yet here we are a year later and nothing's happened. There's no consequences that we're aware of. So I think it does point out, you know, a need for the State Bar, maybe it needs more resources to resolve it, to say yes or no, there is a violation here.
And you mentioned federal judges. These are federal cases, even though in some situations they're only a couple $1,000s. You ask the question that maybe they should be small claims court cases.
Right. When we were covering Righthaven, and we covered 275 Righthaven lawsuits, we thought it was odd that these generally were settled for a few $1,000s. And to get to federal court, you usually have to have a bigger, more substantial issue than a few $1,000s. But what Randazza points out in our interview this week is that copyright is exclusively a federal court matter. You can't sue somebody for copyright in Las Vegas small claims court. And he suggested that maybe Congress needs to create like a small claims system so the people with these minor disputes can resolve them without having to go through the regular federal court process, which can be expensive and intimidating. And I think it really takes away from the federal judges who have, you know, really more important things to do.
And you mentioned that Randazza moved to Las Vegas because he's representing this porn company. What's the company? What is he doing for them?
This company is Corbin. It's called Corbin Fisher is its brand name, and it's actually a gay porn company. And the reason that we even say it's a gay porn company as opposed to a porn company, it relates to its lawsuits. It sues people for infringement if they steal its content. One of the reasons these lawsuits are controversial is because defendants sometimes say that they're a shakedown type of a lawsuit where they demand a settlement or they're going to make my name public if I'm a defendant. Now, some defendants may not want to be associated with porn. Some defendants may not want to be associated specifically with gay porn. And so that's why some of these lawsuits are controversial and considered a shakedown. Randazza denies he's running a shakedown type of an operation, and he gives people a chance to settle or arbitrate before their names become public in any court file.
Wow, and that must be a big motivator. People must settle, even if they think they're in the right, just to prevent their name being out there?
You know, some people don't have a problem being associated with adult material or pornography. Others might be embarrassed. Others might be in a position of public trust where they would be embarrassing and hurt their career if they were associated with porn or a certain type of porn.
Right. Interesting stuff. Randazza is also representing a libel case involving a pretty famous Chinese actress.
Right. The actress who's in the movie several years ago, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, she's a millionaire actress in China. And she sued a dissident Chinese news service operating out of the United States this summer claiming libel. This dissident Chinese news service had reported, based on unnamed sources in China, that she had been involved in providing prostitution services to some high-ranking communist officials in China. And it's really interesting because Randazza represents the dissident Chinese news service. And he says this, you know, is an attack on its free speech rights. And she's a public figure, so she's got to have a really high bar to prove libel and actual intent to harm her. But he also says that because of the sensitivities where this actress is accused of being involved with high-level Chinese government and Communist Party officials, if this news service was to reveal its sources, those sources in China could end up in prison or even be killed. And so it's really an interesting First Amendment case that's unfolding right now.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Sticky issues in these kind of cases.
He's also got another major case where lately, because there's been so many suits over porn content, not just involving Randazza, but attorneys all around the country are filing copyright infringement lawsuits over porn content. Some of the federal judges, particularly in New York and Massachusetts, have suggested that porn may not be protected by copyright. Now, if that was the law, that would wipe out the porn industry, because then there would be no financial incentive to create it, because then anybody could steal it. So it's a pretty serious matter. Randazza is a member of the First Amendment Lawyers Association, and that association has recruited him to file some friend of the court briefs defending the copyrightability of pornography. So it puts him in a pretty big, high-profile national situation, basically trying to defend the viability of the porn industry.
That's so interesting. All these cases are pretty fascinating. Our listeners can read more about Mark John Randazza and all these issues in Vegas Inc. or on VegasInc.com. You're listening to Vegas Inc. Radio, part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here every Monday at 7 a.m. on KUNV 91.5 The Source. I'm your host, Dellen Goldberg, business editor of Vegas Inc., and I'm speaking today with Steve Green, one of our gaming reporters. Switching gears, you had an interesting story last week about the latest legal hurdle in the Harmon case. What's going on with that?
Well, the Harmon, as you know, is the hotel that was built at City Center and never opened. It's never been completed because of construction defects there. It's quite a large structure, 20-plus stories, $275 million. And right now there's a major lawsuit pitting the owner, which is City Center, against the contractor, Perini and the subcontractors. And they're basically going to have a trial next year unless they settle, which is going to be over, number one, the construction defects and who was responsible. Perini blames City Center, which is half owned by MGM Resorts International. MGM blames Perini and its subcontractors for giving them a defective building. So they're gearing up for this massive trial. In the meantime, they've gotten approval to demolish the Harmon, which may or may not happen, you know, next year or in 2014. They still want to do more examination and testing. But it's a high-stakes case for both sides, because hundreds of millions of dollars are at stake. MGM Resorts is going to claim it has lost revenue and business because it has a high-profile building in the middle of City Center next to the Cosmopolitan, producing no revenue. So it's going to be a high-stakes, high-profile trial. The latest development is that Perini is complaining that City Center has improperly hired some expert spin doctors out of California who try to plant stories in the news media with us and other publications to tarnish Perini's reputation. And so they've asked the judge in their case to allow them to serve subpoenas and gather information from these expert spin doctors, which are like public relations companies that specialize in high-stakes litigation. City Center is saying this is normal and routine, and that in a high-profile case like this, they need that litigation support from a PR perspective to communicate to their shareholders and to the community and to consider the public affairs ramifications of the lawsuit. So the judge is allowing Perini to do this exploration. What Perini is going to try to do is show that City Center is trying to taint the jury pool by planning news stories, and so there will be a biased jury, and it could complicate things and may back up a motion by Perini to move the trial out of Las Vegas to Reno or somewhere. And I should point out, this issue about the fairness of a trial has come up before, and the judge in the case has expressed skepticism that a fair jury cannot be found. She pointed out that a fair jury was found in a high-profile endoscopy case, the medical malpractice crisis involving Dr. Desai. She said if a fair trial could be found in that case, she could find a fair jury for the Harmon case.
Well, just because you know about a case doesn't necessarily mean you would be biased as a juror.
Right, and the jurors and the attorneys will be able to ask the potential jurors, do they have a view on it? Of course, most people will have heard about it, but they'll ask them if they have a view on it and if they're leaning one way or the other, and if they're biased, they won't be selected for the jury. And so if they've heard about it, that doesn't necessarily disqualify them.
And it might be too early in the legal proceedings, but have they cited specific cases? Because it seems to me like, at least here at The Sun and Vegas Inc., we've reported on the happenings each step of the way, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, it's pretty unbiased in that it's a court filing or a new legal hurdle. So what are they saying could taint the jury pool?
Well, they haven't produced any specific stories yet. I'm sure they'll find some. But I would point out that we've covered plenty of Perini public affairs efforts on this as well, going back to 2010. They had a high-profile meeting with the governor at the time, Jim Gibbons. They've written letters to county commissioners, you know, saying the Harmon is safe and the city center just wants to take it down because they don't need the hotel rooms because we have an oversupply. And so I'm sure they'll look at some of these stories and say, these are biased against us, and city center will point out other stories that are going to say, you know, these are favorable to Perini and biased against city center. And so it'll be interesting to see whether the judge even pays attention to any of that.
Right. When do you think we're going to hear an answer on this phase of the case?
Well, this will go on for a while because the judge just allowed Perini attorneys to serve their subpoenas on these California alleged spin doctors. And so it'll be months before we actually see any motions or filings based on that information.
All right. Well, we'll have to have you back to update us on the case.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Steve. Steve Green is a business reporter for Vegas Inc. and the Las Vegas Sun. You can follow his coverage at vegasinc.com and lasvegassun.com. Listening to Vegas Inc., part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here every Monday at 7 a.m. on KUNV 91.5 The Source. I'm here now with Ron Sylvester, one of our gaming reporters. Welcome, Ron.
Well, hi. I'm always glad to be here.
Great to have you, as usual. So you've been up and down the strip in downtown looking at our casinos, and there's some big changes with a couple of them. Let's start with Imperial Palace. It's not going to be Imperial Palace for long, correct?
I was going to say where. Imperial Palace announced this week, or Caesars Entertainment announced, that they were getting ready to change the name as part of the new revamping of the Imperial Palace. Anybody who's been down the strip recently, it's kind of hard to get around the all the construction down there. They've got this tunnel over the sidewalk, and to get into the Imperial Palace, you have to walk through kind of this fake construction corridor, and so but it's part of this massive renovation they're doing of the property. And in December, the Imperial Palace is just going to go away. That name's going to go away, and it's going to become the Quad, which after we broke the story this week, if you go online and read the comments, there's a bunch of comments that basically say, huh? And people don't really get the name. And when I asked Caesars, they really didn't have a specific reason why it was named the Quad. They kind of want people to call them the Q, and they think it has a hip and kind of a quirky feel to it.
Who comes up with these names, though? Obviously, I mean, this is a multi-million-dollar endeavor. They're not just going to slap some name on, we would hope.
Caesars Entertainment, and they're not giving credit to any specific individual or committee for coming up with this name. But
credit or blame.
Yeah, people are kind of befuddled by the name and what it means. The Quad to some people is like kind of a college campus type atmosphere. I had somebody mention to me, the Quad is a part of the Mormon religion. It describes the four books of Mormon. Are they trying to market to Mormons? That was really bizarre. And
a four-wheel vehicle.
Yeah. It's a four-wheel vehicle. Basically, they want to revamp the Imperial Palace, which has been around for more than 30 years, because they want a kind of a swanky new building sitting there at the entrance to what's going to be the Link, which is the $500 million entertainment and retail project, which includes that high roller observation wheel. And so they, this is going to kind of be the entrance. People can walk through the new casino, which is going to be, it's going to go from 50,000 square feet to 65,000 square feet, and they can walk through the new casino and they can get to the Link, or they can walk around the new building, and that's going to be the entrance. So I think they wanted something a little bit more startling than what the Imperial Palace had looked like. But inside, it sounds like a lot of the things, they will have a new casino. I think the Asian theme will be gone. It'll be more kind of a contemporary theme. And but a lot of the restaurants and stuff will retain the same names and the same thing. So there'll be parts of the Imperial Palace that's left, but it'll be a new place. And the designers that they've hired for this are the same people who have done Red Rock and M Resort and the Eastside Cannery, which are all pretty cool buildings.
And what about the auto exhibit? I know that's a big draw. That's going to stay.
The Divas show with Frank Moreno and the Human Nature music show is, all going to stay for the time being.
And what about the rooms? Are those getting a facelift or they're staying the same?
I think they're redoing the rooms too. I mean, this is going to be a complete, renovation. The structure, like everything else, we've stopped blowing up things in Las Vegas and started, revamping them using the existing structure.
And what's the status of Link? When's that big wheel going to go up? I know there's progress being made on the Mandalay Bay
Skyview
wheel.
Both wheels are going up, and it's still set. The Link is still set to open in 2013. And the new, I guess we should just start calling it the queue, is being done in phases. They've already got a new check-in desk. They're working on the valet, a new valet. That's going to be next. And this is all supposed to be finished by the end of 2013, and the wheel is supposed to start spinning sometime next year.
And I don't know if they went into this, but Imperial Palace is not the most expensive or high-end of resorts. Do you think the room prices are going to stay in line with what they are now, or
they haven't said. I would expect them to go up with the newness of everything. So who knows? On the other hand, down on the other two doors down, we've still got Bill's Gambling Hall as kind of that gritty place that people can go, and there's still Casino Royale.
Your favorite place.
Since O'Shea's gone, people have to look for, it seems especially locals like to go down to the Strip and find those kind of smoky, gritty places.
Great. Well, what about the Golden Gate downtown? They've got a ton of...
The Golden Gate has just finished this really marvelous renovation. It's a One Fremont Street. It was like the first hotel and casino down there, which is why it's got this great address of number one Fremont. It's been added to. It was added to in the 1930s, and in the first renovation in 50 years, they've added a new kind of almost freestanding structure. They had to do this for code reasons, but it's connected to the hotel, where they've got 16 new rooms and suites. They've renovated more than 100 of the rooms, including some of the rooms that were there in 1906, you can still stay in, but they've been completely redone. But the new luxury suites and the penthouses, which you can't rent those. Those have to be, you have to be invited to stay in those. But they're really they've really done a fabulous job. And Mark Brandenburg, who's the owner, was very proud of the fact that they hired Gensler Architects, who were the same They were the lead architect on City Center, which is the largest private development in the history of the United States. And as he said, it's no small irony that they also came downtown and did the smallest Las Vegas renovation in recent memory. So, but it's really they've redone the casino. They've added a high limit room, which they didn't have before. You know, for people who remember several years ago, Golden Gate had some of the lowest betting maximums in town for about $300. And now it's you can make go in the high limit room, make a $5,000 bet. It's brand new. The penthouse suites are pretty fabulous. They've got a complete patio out there with a gas, like a gas grill, so you can like barbecue out overlooking Fremont Street. It's kind of cool.
That's excellent. And why the renovation? Just to keep up with all the changes on Fremont Street?
It's been there since 1906. It was time for an upgrade. Like I said, they hadn't renovated that place in 50 years, but they've really put a lot of money into it. They won't say how much, but you can tell from just the look of the place that it really is a different kind of place. And the thing that's cool about it is the rooms are very contemporary. It's got some of the same. They've got the same technology for their audiovisual, like their televisions and electronics that they do at the MGM Grand. But it's very contemporary. But then down in the casino, they've kept that real historic kind of feel from when the Rat Pack used to go there and drink at the bar and play.
So you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, and they've got on the walls of the rooms and throughout they've got those historic photographs. And when you check in at the check-in desk, they have a case with an old one of the original guest registrations, and then they had the Golden Gate was the place that had the first telephone in Las Vegas, and they have that phone.
Wow!
And in the hallways, they have antiques that date back to the 1930s, before the actual furniture that was in the room that they've used to decorate. So it's actually quite a cool place.
Excellent. And what about the shrimp cocktail? Inquiring minds want to know.
Oh, hey, the shrimp cocktail's still there. I think it was at one time, 1959, Golden Gate brought the first shrimp cocktail to Las Vegas from San Francisco. And it was actually Mark Brandenburg, the owner. It was actually his stepdad, who was the former owner, who brought in the shrimp cocktail. I think it was at one time 99 cents. I think it's up to $3 now.
Yeah, $2.99.
Yeah, but I had one the other day, and it was just to say I did. So it's one of those kind of things you have to do in Vegas is go to the original place with the shrimp cocktail.
Still delicious. Well, thanks so much, Ron. Ron Sylvester is a reporter for Vegas Inc. and the Las Vegas Sun. You can follow his coverage at vegasinc.com and lasvegassun.com. This is Vegas Inc. Radio, part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here every Monday at 7 a.m. on KUNV 91.5 The Source. I'm your host, Dellen Goldberg, business editor of Vegas Inc. Thanks to Steven Zeller, our producer, and the KUNV team. And thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your day.